Did you know that this week is National Simplify Your Life Week? Well, our guests today have some tips maybe to simplify your life as a consumer. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Pleased to have back Sandy Chalmers, Assistant Deputy Secretary with the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Sandy, great to have you back.
Nice to be here, Larry.
And as well, Michelle Reinen, who directs the Bureau of Consumer Protection within the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Michelle, thanks for joining us once again.
Thanks for having us back.
Well, they come the first Thursday of every month. Always look forward to it. You may have some questions for them. Maybe you have a consumer question. Maybe there's a scam question. I hope you'll call it 1-800-642-1234. Send us an email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Just look for The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of the page. A lot of people are doing back-to-school shopping this time of year. I've been looking at some of the ads for my daughter. Have you got some good tips for us today, Sandy?
Yeah, I did a little research on my own and found that the average cost for sending a child back to school, this is a K through 12 child, is $673.57 per child. So that'll hurt. That'll hurt. Yeah, there are lots of price comparison apps you can use now. Certainly reviewing the advertisement. Advertisements and circulars is important, but the most important thing here is to keep an eye on the display screen when your items are being scanned and rung up. If you think you've been overcharged, speak up at the cash register. It's a lot easier to remedy the situation when you're in the store than trying to fix it, you know, a week later. But if there is a pricing error, the state law in Wisconsin is that the store refund any overcharge amount. So if you do detect an overcharge once you've gotten home, work with customer service and you are guaranteed a refund. It's a good idea to double check your receipt before you leave the store to make absolutely sure the totals are correct.
How long, you know, I get my receipts and so, you know, if you're shopping at several places, I might have a pocket full of receipts when I get home. And how long should I keep those receipts? Michelle, have you got an idea on that?
Well, we always encourage consumers to be looking at their credit card statement to make sure it's accurate. So for that purpose, I'd at least keep the receipt as long as until you get your bill so you can verify the charge. But some stores will do price adjustments if they put something on sale the next week. So you may want to keep the receipt at least those 7 to 10 days so you could get a potential price adjustment on something. But you also just want to keep it if there's been an error until you complain and the error gets resolved.
And what's the smartest way to pay for purchases?
Well...
Cash, I suppose, or not.
Cash works. I mean, it's an instant return. If you end up, if there's a return policy and you need to return it, then you'd get the cash back. There would be typically no processing or wait period. Others, if it's something that's going to be delivered to you, then you'd probably want to use a credit card because if it isn't received, you could dispute the charges with your credit card company and have protections that way. But then we always talk about the security of credit card systems in stores and data breaches and that sort of thing. And if you're shopping online as opposed to in the store, how secure is your system? So you really have a lot to evaluate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Peggy in Park Falls has a question for you. Let's turn there. Peggy, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure thing.
I sure do like your show.
Thank you.
My question has to do with cars and car dealerships. And I just bought a car recently, and within 24 hours, I was having trouble with it. I took it in, and they quote-unquote fixed it, and now I'm in trouble again. It's been, maybe 2 weeks. So they're going to have me. At what do I start to fuss about this, maybe?
You're kind of breaking up a little bit, but I think we got the gist of it. Problems with a car Peggy just purchased, and it's been a couple of weeks, and she's been back once and is going back again. How long before you...
Right. So car purchases, that whole area is regulated by the Department of Transportation.
Okay.
So we can't speak real in depth to this subject because they do those regulations. But she'll want to keep paperwork and keep a trail of what was stated to her and when she took it in so they can do that evaluation. And it's probably going to come down to what warranty or guarantee there is and any circumstance of lemon law that's changed over the years as well, so how that could potentially apply, and is it the dealership or is it a manufacturer level situation, because new car versus used car. So Department of Transportation is where she should start, and I've just given a lot of considerations.
And I think she's doing the right thing. She's going back, but if there comes a point when, hey, this is not working out, then she goes to the Department of Transportation.
She can, or to the manufacturer level as well, because really be something if it's a new car with the manufacturer. And so it sounds like she has a dealership that's working with her, but when will they elevate it to the manufacturer too?
Yeah, that's another thing to think about. There you go, Peggy. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Let's turn to Mary in Mineral Point next. Hi, Mary. Mary, are you there? Oh, must have lost Mary. Too bad. She had some nice things to say. I thought, Mary, maybe you can call back. We'll go next to talking about college students for just a minute before we take another call. They are a prime target for scammers. And as a professor here on the UW-Madison campus, I see lots of little stands along the sidewalk selling, you know, getting signed up for credit cards and all sorts of things, Sandy.
Yeah, they are targeted by scammers because college students are brand new consumers without a lot of experience in the marketplace. And I know there is an effort to provide them with some financial education in high school, but they're still new at all this, and they're not used to doing things like reviewing bank statements on a monthly basis or reviewing credit card statements and financial statements. So they are often targeted. We looked at some scams that are targeting that age group right now, particularly those in school. We've heard about scammers who research lists of students who have applied for student loans, and then they call them and say, you need to start paying us immediately or we'll take you to court. And they'll ask for payment via prepaid debit cards or wire transfer. You know, so they know where these kids are vulnerable. Another one, the scammers are spoofing the phone number to make it look like they're calling from the financial aid office of the university, and they threaten the student with a warrant for arrest if they don't make an immediate payment. So, you know, targeting the financial part of this is very scary for a kid who's 18 or 19.
Sure.
And these are the types of things that we've heard are happening right now.
So something for parents to remind their children about. If you get that kind of thing, call mom and dad first. Or if you get something supposedly from the bursar's office or the chancellor's office, call the number back. Not the same number. Look it up and call them back.
Or walk yourself over there.
Just walk
over
there.
Get in line because talk with a real person who works in the office.
Yeah, there we go. Barb in New London up next. Hi, Barb. Thanks for calling.
Hello. I just wanted to say how wonderful this show is with the consumer protection advice because it saved my family twice. I got a call claiming to be my credit card, wanting my personal information, and because I learned that that's not what they do, I just hung up and I was on my way to work. My daughter is in her early 20s. She works third shift, and she called me on the landline in an absolute hysterical panic because she told me that the IRS was calling her saying she owed thousands of dollars. And she just was hysterical, and I was able to tell her, because of what I learned on this program, just hang up. It's a scam. They don't call you. If they need to reach you, they'll send you a letter. But she was totally in panic mode because this person was saying she owed $5,000. They were taking her to court, and she was just hysterical. And because of what I learned from the consumer protection people you speak to, I was able to tell her, you're not in trouble. Calm down. Just hang up your cell phone. They're not the IRS.
Oh.
So you really learned so many wonderful things on this show, and I want to thank you for it.
Oh, Barb, thanks so much. Well, that's music to your ears, isn't it, Sandy?
It makes it all worth it, because for every person like Barb, there are, unfortunately, victims out there. So please share your stories with each other, and especially if you have an elderly friend or relative, make sure they know about some of these common scams, like the tech support scam or a credit card scam. These criminals are extremely persistent. They know where we're vulnerable, and they will continue to scam us until everybody understands what these scams are and how to identify them.
Barb,
I would have been a victim had I not heard on there, because I didn't know those things until I heard it on the radio.
Barb, thank you so much for this call. I really appreciate it. And and you're also helping others out there, because they're hearing your story, and maybe for the first time. So it's great information you're giving as well.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you for all you guys do to help us.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, nice call. Krista in Milwaukee, thank you for calling.
Good morning. I have two what I hope will be brief questions. One is, if I bought something from a company online and the product failed within a month, actually, they are not willing to do any sort of refund or replacement or any consideration. What can I do about that? The other question is, merchants in Wisconsin, I thought, are required to give a receipt. And what if they don't? How do I make sure I'm being charged correctly?
Okay. A couple of good questions there. Michelle, do you want to start?
Sure. As it relates to the product purchased online, it depends what the return policy or warranty policy is with the store that you shopped on online. Some say 100% customer satisfaction guarantee for life of the product, and it can be anything that they sell. And others are all sales final. It's yours, and you purchase it. If it breaks, then at that point you go to the manufacturer of the product and you see what they are willing to do, if anything, regarding their product, and stand behind their manufacturer's name. That's an option for you.
Okay.
As to the receipt aspect, I'm looking at Sandy as well.
Yeah, we're not sure whether law requires that you be given a receipt. You certainly could ask for one if you're not given one, because that's a record of your purchase. And if there is a problem, you want some kind of proof that you actually purchased the product at that location from that store.
Yeah, I know with receipts that when you pay by credit card, it has to truncate the credit card number on the printed receipt, but I'm not sure about the requirement to provide one.
Yeah, one other thing on the online purchase. We don't know all the details, but this may be something that she would want to file a complaint with us, depending on the details again. But you can do that online at datcp.wi.gov. And we'll ask you for your name and address and the basic facts of what happened and what you'd like in terms of resolution. And in many cases, we can follow up with a retailer on your behalf and get a good resolution.
So it's datcp.wi.gov.
Right.
Yeah.
And you can also call our toll-free consumer hotline if you're not online, and that number is 1-800-422-7128.
There we go.
All right. Thank you for your help.
Thanks a lot for calling. Just to go back to the first part of that, I'm thinking back to a few years ago, and your advice, I think, was good about going to the manufacturer. I purchased a stove, and it broke down about 15 days after the warranty was over, and the place I bought it from said, well, we're not going to cover that. So I called the manufacturer and got they said, oh, we'll cover that. Without even we'll take care of that. So then the company that I had originally bought it from actually came out and replaced the parts that needed to be replaced, and at no cost to me at all. So
my thought process is always give them an opportunity to make it right. Just you're presenting them with an opportunity to stand behind their stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again, Krista.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate the call. John in Wausau, we're on to you now. Hi, John.
How's it going, guys?
Great. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Well, I've had a house for about 4 years, and all of a sudden I've been getting mail that says, welcome to the neighborhood, and it has an Asian woman's name on it that's never lived here, and I don't know who she is. I've looked her up. I can't find her anywhere. But it's like someone has registered my address with some list house, and I'm wondering if there is a problem where somebody might try and take over my property or try and do something and get me in trouble or... I called the post office, and they said, just write a note on your mailbox and say, this person doesn't live or do not deliver mail unless it's addressed to the residents of the house, and then list them. But I'm just wondering if there's any sort of implication for me getting these mail, welcome to the neighborhood, and all these insurance companies and all these local businesses. And
yeah, so forth. Yeah, okay. Sandy,
yeah.
Chalmers?
Well, you never know what's behind this, but... One, this can be a red flag that you've been the victim of identity theft, and that isn't always the case, but it could be. So this is a good opportunity for you to check your credit report to make sure that there are no lines of credit or anything like that showing on your report that you don't remember setting up that you have not authorized.
Okay.
And you can do that by going to annualcreditreport.com.
Okay.
And you will be asked for your Social Security number as part of the login process, so just be prepared for that. But that's something that we would recommend that you check, just as a precaution.
That's free, isn't it?
Yes, it is. You're entitled by federal law to check your credit report free of charge 3 times a year.
Wow. So annualcreditreport.com.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. And anything else you think I should do or...
I think that's the best place to start, isn't it?
Right.
You know, you hope it's maybe a case where somebody wrote down their wrong, a wrong number, transposed a couple of numbers on the address or something because they couldn't remember it. So it could be just something as simple as that, but you want to make sure that it's not something bad. Thanks, John. Good luck. Appreciate the call.
Thanks.
Mary Ann in Crystal Lake, Illinois, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Mary Ann.
Hi. I wanted to tell you about a scam we heard about. A friend of ours was trying to rent an apartment. Actually, no, I guess it was a house. But talked to the rental agent. Next day got a call from supposedly the rental company saying, let's fill this form out. And it turned out it was all a hack on having to do with Zillow.
And so he wound up...
gave out the information because he had talked to this woman and this company and understood they were calling him back as a result of his inquiry. But it somehow Zillow was involved. I don't quite know how that part worked. But it was a hack on Zillow.
Hmm.
And they got all of his information.
Boy. Sandy, you want to comment?
In today's climate where there is an incredible amount of fraud coming from other parts of the world, you have to be absolutely sure who's on the other end of the telephone, especially when they're asking you for personal information. And what we recommend is that when you get a call for asking for that kind of information, no matter who they say they are or whether it makes sense that they might be calling, that you hang up and then reach out to the person or company that they say they are and say, I just got a call from somebody asking me for my social security number. Is that you or your employee? And they'll verify. But, you know, people, callers claim to be from Social Security or Medicare or your clinic or anyone.
Bank.
Yeah. In order to get your personal information.
Thanks a lot, Marianne, for sharing that with us. It was gives us a good opportunity to let people know. Appreciate your call. Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection are our guests today. KP Whaley, our on-air producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 2 o'clock today, Kathleen Dunn finds out why nearly 59 million people are paying out of pocket for complementary health services like acupuncture and massage. That's at 2 right now. Taking a look at consumer protection issues with Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you so much for joining us. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And we'll go right back to the phones and to Steve in Wonder Lake. Steve, thanks for calling.
Good morning, Michelle, Sandy, and Larry. I'd like to also commend you on this type of program. This is extremely important, and I encourage everybody to tell their friends, relatives, and acquaintances to be really careful and that these things are coming. When I first received my IRS automated robocall, I called the Chicago Consumer Protection Agency, and actually somebody picked up the phone, and they said, yeah, they're checking that phone number. Three things I'd like to see done. I'd like to somehow see a movement against telemarketer calls in general. My home phone is for my use only and not theirs. I'd like to see the ability for phone number, name, caller ID spoofing to be eliminated from the system. That's got to be a computer software issue. And finally, I think caller ID ought to be standard for everybody.
All right. Good comments. Thanks for calling. Sandy, any thoughts back from you?
Well, the concept of banning all telemarketing calls gets into First Amendment freedoms, and so that gets a little touchy. A lot of his other two suggestions are really interesting, but part of the problem we have right now is it's a unique period in our history when it comes to telecommunications, because some of it is digital, and some of it is still the old copper wires. So you have kind of a disjoined type situation, which makes it difficult for law enforcement to track back a lot of these callers. And some of the caller ID issues also have to do with that. So I certainly sympathize with him, but the practical side of this, you know, the technology side of this may not be quite so easy. I think there are more and more tools that we have available to us to block calls, to identify fraudulent calls. We've talked a lot about how putting your number on the no-call list, while it won't eliminate calls, certainly gives you a tool to identify a fraudulent call. And some of the call blocking technology is great, especially when it comes to a smartphone. There are lots of apps you can use that blacklist sales calls, so you won't get those calls.
Yeah, it's worth it. Thanks so much, Steve, for calling. Appreciate it. And Chuck in Wisconsin Dells, turning to you next. Hi, Chuck.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for your show.
Sure.
Hey, this is kind of humorous, following up on one of your callers. I have a a cookingware pot here. It has a 100-year limited warranty. And it's a name brand, you know. I mean, it's a good pot. There's no doubt about it. But during the warranty period, they may be returned by the original owner postpaid to Consumer Affairs, et cetera, et cetera. But I thought that was kind of humorous. I was always going to send it to Michael Feldman. But, you know, the original purchaser would have to be some kind of person, I guess.
In order to have that. Oh, good. Thanks for bringing that smile to our faces here, Chuck. Well, you know, some of those old cast iron pots pans, I've got a couple of cast irons that probably are going to live 100 years.
Right.
Long past my demise.
I have a great aunt who's 101, so she'd be a candidate for return.
Randy in Waukesha, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I just had a question. I thought I heard lady say that you could check your credit report 3 times a year. Is that a change in the law? And or is that just the 3 different agencies? And then also had a question was, when you check your credit report, is that once every 12 months or once every calendar year? How does that work?
Those are good questions,
yeah.
Too.
This is a federal law that's been in place for several years now, so it's not new. It's 3 times per 12-month period. And what we recommend is that you rotate between the 3 major credit reporting bureaus and make sure that your credit report is clean and as you expect it to look on each of the 3 bureaus. So the 3 are Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax.
And it's, I'm not sure I heard you right.
So it's 3 times per 12-month period.
Not per calendar year.
Right.
Okay. All right. Good.
You can check each one 3 times or just
you can check a total of 3 times, and we recommend checking each one once.
Okay, I understand now. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Randy. And Karen in Jefferson, it's your turn. Thank you for calling.
Hello.
Hi.
I was wondering about the nail salons that seem to be in just about every shopping mall that have, I think they're Vietnamese people. They're like totally Vietnamese people working there, no African Americans or Caucasians or anything like that. And this seems to be a cross-country thing. I know my cousin in New York goes to one, and these are all at shopping malls. My sister in Nevada and my sister in Minneapolis have gone there because they save $10 on a pedicure. My sister in Nevada and my sister in Minnesota, and I've seen them here in Wisconsin, like in Janesville.
Mm-hmm.
And my 2 sisters have each, you know, probably about a year apart, gotten their foot infected, had to go to the doctor, everything else. They wanted some recourse, and they couldn't even get a refund for their pedicure.
So here, and I'm not sure about the nationality of all of the folks who are running this, but the question, Karen raises an interesting question as to if you go to one of these places and then there's an infection as a result, what kind of recourse is there?
Well, a lot of these occupations are regulated by the State Department of Safety and Professional Services. And the website there, I believe, is dsps.wi.gov.
dsps.wi.gov.
Right. And they have a license lookup application on their website where you can type in the name of your veterinarian or physician or cosmetologist, whoever, and see whether that person has a license and whether it's current and up to date. So I think that's where I would start on this.
And we're not familiar with the rules and regulations regarding it, but DSPS, right, again?
Yeah, and that DSPS.wi.gov. And they also have a place where you can file a complaint about...
That's probably, if you wound up getting an infection,
That's something that you might want to report.
Yeah. Thanks, Karen, for calling. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Let's turn to Randy in Waukesha next. Oh, we'll get to Randy in just a minute. Let's go to Molly. She has an email question regarding Internet service providers and advertised speeds. Her speeds have slowed significantly, and she says, we already submitted a complaint to DATCAP and received a response from our ISP, which resulted in them giving us a $15 a month credit, which is better than nothing. However, the past few months, our service has slowed down so much as to be nigh unusable. The ISP's official line is, you pay for the service you subscribe to, not the speeds you actually get. To me, this seems like a blatant false advertising. Does Molly have any recourse?
If the circumstances have changed from the initial resolution that Molly received with the credit and the speed she was getting at the time she filed the complaint to now nothing or just about nothing, I suggest she give us a call and resubmit this additional information so it can be further examined. This is something that we look at all the time. Our companies providing what it is that they are representing, and consumers believe that they are contracting for or renewing month to month, however their agreement may be. But we look at the promotion behind it or the advertising and then what's actually being delivered. So this is an area we're hearing about.
So she should go to DATCP.wi.gov.
Or because she's already filed a complaint, she has a contact person that worked her initial file. She could call that person or email that person directly.
Oh, that's probably a good idea.
If someone else is out there and has the same issue, go online to our website and file a first-time complaint.
Dennis in Red Granite up next. Hi, Dennis. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to let you know that I am probably the luckiest guy in Wisconsin because in the last month, I've received calls that I've won 6 trips to Jamaica. So, and remember the old adage, if it sounds too good to be true, I'm sure it is.
What is that? Good point. What's usually or what's often behind these, Sandy, if you say, oh, good, I take the trip, what happens next?
Well, first, I'd like to congratulate him for being the big winner. Yeah, these scams take a number of forms, but usually they'll say you've won the big prize of a trip, and they'll ask for some kind of upfront fees to pay for processing or port fees, you know, make up some kind of phony fee, and you'll send the money and then never hear from them again.
Well, Dennis, I don't think you're headed for Jamaica anytime soon.
Well, I hung up every time I called.
Thanks. Thanks a lot for calling. Another good point to bring up. David in Wausau, we're on to you now. Hi, David.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Great show. I got a cute little anecdotal story about thwarting a Gmail hack. I got an email from my brother. It looked normal. There was a hyperlink in there that I clicked on, cue the Jaws music, and, of course, then I got a window that I could not close on my Google browser, Chrome browser, telling me to call a phone number. So at about this moment, I started being suspicious, but I thought, well, they're trying to get information over the phone. Let me call it. And I had some idle time. So I called it, and it was somebody with a heavy Middle Eastern accent, and I was asked to be put on hold until a supervisor could be found, and that took a long time. That was another clue, if you will, or affirmation that I thought somebody was, you know, coming after me.
Scamming you, yeah.
And so finally I got the supervisor, and I said, so tell me what's going on here. And he goes, well, sir, we need the blah, blah, blah. And I said, wait a minute. You guys are the hackers, aren't you? I'm talking to the actual hackers, aren't I? And that guy hung up faster than you can, you know what. So it was a cute story. I didn't think I would ever fall victim, but maybe somebody will be able to use it in the future.
Yeah. That one's happened a lot of times, hasn't it, Sandy?
Well, it's interesting because sometimes people have the ransomware problem and they don't know how it happened. But in this case, we have a pretty good idea of how it happened. Yeah, the lesson here, I guess, is that you have to be skeptical of any mail email you receive because you really don't know who it's from. And we don't know whether his brother's email was hacked or whether his contacts were hacked or something. It could have been a number of things. But any email with a link to click on can be a big problem.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks again for calling, David. Appreciate your call. As a matter of fact, I've called this person. I have a guest on my show regularly who I suddenly started getting strange emails from, you know, with something to click. And, of course, I didn't click it at all. Called him and said, you know, your email is hacked. Because it was something he would never send, I'm sure.
Yeah, and you often need to let those people know they've been hacked because they don't see it happening on their side. We, the receivers, see these emails coming from friends and family, and that person has no idea what's happened.
Yeah. Well, David, thanks again. I want to give Jill in Greenfield a chance to join us. Jill, hello.
Hi. I'm calling regarding my mother received a phone call. She thought it was her insurance salesman. Our insurance company, because they seemed to know everything about her. And it ended up, it was a guy named George Watson, and he sold her, he took a third-party check from her checking account. He knew everything. She didn't give him anything. He knew everything and withdrew $296 for insurance. And the company was provider supposedly was MediSure. I did contact the state, and they had never heard of that insurance thing. So we did freeze her account. I did try going to check her credit and online, and I don't think she's ever had it before, had it done before, and it wouldn't let me do it. So I was just curious, do I try? There are three options. Do I try the next person, or what's my best option for that?
Did you have all the relevant information, Social Security number and so forth?
Yes.
Huh.
And it wouldn't let you check?
It denied me.
I would try another one, but why would it then?
I just thought it was weird, and I didn't want to go to the other two and use up all my chances, because I understand you can only do it once a year.
Right, but were you at the annualcreditreport.com?
Correct, yes. That's what the state told me, to go to that one, and I went to, I think it was Equifax.
Once you were at that site, then you directed
correct.
Yourself and said that's the one that you want.
Right, and yep, it was the first choice.
And you went online versus calling?
Correct, I went online.
I would try calling, and there must be a zero out to find out why you're being denied. And if you continue to have trouble, file a complaint with us so we can assist with this, because there has to be a root cause for the denial. But while you have all the information and you're assisting, it officially needs to be the person who is to receive the report. So I mean, you don't have authority, you're just acting as her. So
correct.
But I would, you know, have her file that complaint if you don't get anywhere with the phone call.
We tried when we froze her checking account, so no more payment could be taken out, and it was suggested that she do her credit check. But she doesn't really want anything on the internet, and the bank wouldn't do it for us. So,
Right. And I think the phone number is a perfect way to do it as opposed to doing it online.
Gotcha.
And then you just have to provide, again, remember the Social Security number in order to get the information mailed to you, because they'll mail it out, and just be watching for it and watch for that piece of mail.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller with my guests Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us as we take a look at consumer protection issues. Larry Mueller here with Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers. Susan in Madison has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Susan. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Yes, my son is 14, and yesterday in the mail, he received, at first I thought it was a credit card application, but it's for a NetSpend prepaid MasterCard, and it also, you can add money or have direct deposit, and it's from MetaBank. So I guess I wanted to know if it's legal for them to do that for a 14-year-old, and secondly, should I be concerned about identity theft for him?
Yeah, some companies are pretty aggressive about marketing these prepaid cards as kind of a alternative to having a bank account.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I'm not surprised by that. But one option you do have is to go to just take him off their lists, and you can do that by going to optoutprescreen.com.
Mm-hmm.
So optoutprescreen is all one word, .com.
Okay.
And you can take yourself off the credit card solicitation list also.
Okay.
My kids, while they were in college, would get several of those solicitations a week. So, and there
I expected the college level. I guess I was just a little surprised because he's 14.
Yeah, and they're probably marketing it more as a banking, you know, alternative to having a bank account or checking account.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. John in Big Bend, it's your turn. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Before I just talk about my main reason for calling, I want to just mention that because of all of the scams that are arriving at our house via the telephone line, we let an answering machine answer all of our calls. And if it's somebody that we want to talk to, we will call them back. Otherwise, we just let the answering machine drop the call. And it really works. This past Tuesday, my wife and I were up fairly late, around 11:30 p.m., there was a knock on our door, and there was a young female of undetermined age talking to us through our locked screen door. She said that she's from Illinois and she's lost. Can she come in and use our telephone? Well, my wife and I both had the same thought, no. We're not letting anybody into our house. I went to the door, couldn't see her because our light didn't work. We told her, give us the phone number. We will make the phone call for you, and we'll let you use a portable phone outside. At that point, she disappeared, and I heard a car door open and her voice again. And the car door slammed, and she took off. We thought this was kind of a funny situation, so we called our police department. The call was relayed to the sheriff's department. About 15 minutes later, two deputies showed up at our door to come and investigate. And one of the officers showed us a picture of somebody who is going around the neighborhood. They try to get into the house. They look for anything that might be of value, especially a purse or a coin purse. and they use this to buy drugs. So the sheriff's department was aware of it. They showed me a picture, but unfortunately I wasn't able to identify the one who knocked on our door as the one who was on the smartphone of the officer.
Hmm. That's an interesting story, isn't it, Michelle?
It is. You know, in today's society, we have to be very cautious of things. And that was a nice approach because you want to help people who need help, but you have to think of your own security and safety at the same time. And that was a good solution to not let them in, but still be able to try and offer help if it was truly needed, but keeping your own security first and foremost. And we worry about this when we see some types of door-to-door transient sellers. Every year we tend to hear a few stories where someone was selling goods and services of whatever type. They let them in. Can I please use your bathroom? There's two people doing the sales. One distracts the homeowner and the other one, instead of going to the bathroom, goes in and robs all the jewelry or other things. Or sometimes the personal safety of the homeowner is in danger too. So we're always very cautious about people who are selling goods door to door, and the whole concept of letting them in your house unless they have all the IDs, it was a prearranged appointment, you wanted it. So good job.
Thanks, John, for calling. Appreciate it very much. Sam in Cedarburg has something for us as well. Sam, hello.
Larry, nice to meet you. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was a college student. I just graduated in May from UW La Crosse, and funny situation, my last rental agreement while living there, I didn't have to sign a formal lease. However, a deposit was required, so I paid the deposit, and I just exited the lease. However, my renter no longer contacts me, and I did not get my lease back. And I'm just wondering what sort of action I can take from here.
Okay.
Well, this is typically one of the leading consumer complaint types that we get. So you would want to file a complaint with the Consumer Protection. Go online, datcp.wi.gov, or call 1-800-422-7128. The landlord-tenant laws are a landlord has 21 days to return a security deposit at the end of a lease, or after a tenant moves out if it's beyond the end of the lease. And since that lease had been long overdue, it was a month to month, if those 21 days are up, he should have some withholding statement or the money back at this point in time based on what we know now.
Okay. There you go. Thanks a lot, Sam, for calling. And we have Norbert. I had a question on via email. Can a Dish Network force you to use automatic bill paying by giving them account or access to your bank or your credit card?
We've seen a lot of the telecommunications carriers moving to electronic payments or electronic billing. It would probably come down to what's the original term of the contract when you made that agreement. And then if you're at a renewal stage, they can change the terms and conditions on you and require a different form, and you can choose not to do business any longer with them. So potentially.
Yeah, they could. Yeah, depending. Okay, Tim in Appleton, thanks for calling. Hi.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. A couple times your guests mentioned that when we contact the credit services that we need to key in our Social Security number. That makes me nervous anytime I have to key my Social Security number over the Internet. Could you provide information on how to deal with the credit services via mail or telephone?
Yeah, if you go to the annualcreditreport.com site, they do have information there on how to do this by mail. So it is an option. And there's also a telephone number you can call. It's 1-800. Sorry, I'll start again. 1-877-322-8228.
I didn't get it all.
1-877-322-8228.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Bob in Madison. Hi, Bob.
Hi, yeah, I'm just calling in regards to the state and federal no-call list, and I'm kind of curious because whenever it seems I put either my cell phone or my home phone numbers on the no-call list, it increases the amount of bogus calls that I get in regards to card services and just merchants trying to sell stuff. And I'm kind of curious as to how that could be happening. If I'm on a no-call list, why am I getting these phone calls?
Yeah, we do hear that every once in a while, and I don't know whether it's perception that you're just noticing the calls that you get. It is a violation of federal law to use the numbers on the no-call list for purposes other than intended. So you have the option of reporting that to us or to the Federal Trade Commission. We do hear that from time to time.
And it's too bad. But if you would like, go ahead and contact the folks at DATCAP at datcp.wi.gov and file with them. Pat sent us an email. I usually use cash rather than credit cards if I've got less than a $20 purchase, especially if it's locally owned small businesses. However, I've had clerks tell me that they will charge an additional 2-3% if I want to use my credit card at their business rather than cash. Is that legal? And I believe it is.
Yeah, as long as they have that posted somewhere in their store. You know, a lot of gas stations have a cash discount, and that's legal as well.
Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers, our guests today, they're going to be with us right up until 12:30. We'll take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us, and then we will be back with our guests. You stay with us. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here as we take a look at consumer protection issues with Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Great to have them back. They come by the first Thursday of every month, so something to look forward to, the first Thursday of every month. But they're here right now, so call in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Roger in Stoughton, thank you for waiting. We're on to you now.
Hi. I just wanted to talk a little bit about a nefarious practice called typo squatting on the Internet and also on the telephone system. There are websites that are interested in fleecing us that buy domains that have spellings that are actually misspellings of important financial institutions and stores and if you type the name of a store or a bank into the search bar of a web browser and you happen to land on one of those misspellings and they know which are the common misspellings, you can open a website that looks pretty good, but it's not going to be for the institution you were hoping to be dealing with. Some of the websites are pretty clever.
They'll
steal your information, if not your money.
Yeah, absolutely. Sandy, you see that all the time, don't you?
Seen that, and it is common with well-known customer service lines too, where somebody will set up an account with just one digit difference or a couple of digits transposed. Something else that we see a lot and hear about from time to time are things like if somebody searches DMV, the first website to pop up will be dmv.com. which is not DMV, our state DOT's DMV, which is a .gov domain. So that's something else to be careful of, because they will charge you for forms and things like that that you obviously can get free of charge if you're on the correct DMV.gov website.
Good to bring that up. Thanks a lot, Roger. Appreciate it. Joe and Madison up next. Joe, hello.
Good morning. Afternoon, I guess.
Yeah. What can we do for you?
I past the age of 70, and I'm more and more hearing among my compatriots, people my age, various scams and attempts and all those sorts of things have been well documented on your show this morning. My question is, how many arrests were made through the investigative efforts of the agency last year? What's a typical jail time or penalty for being a person who perpetrates a scam and those sorts of things?
Yeah, well, that's a good, interesting question. You folks have some data on money restored, as an example. Do you not, Michelle?
We do. Every year we try and collect data to see how much we returned to consumers, whether it be through actual refunds or restitution or recall availability. And last year, I believe we were in the $4.5 million range. Some years we've been as high as $18 million, and it depends on if a large case has settled. That can sometimes take years to resolve. Or it depends on how many consumers were impacted and at what dollar value that is. We do have plenty of cases that we refer to district attorneys, and they end up either with probation, parole, or jail time or prison time in those cases. And that, again, fluctuates year to year as to how much time individuals end up serving. We partner with the Federal Trade Commission as well on a number of cases that have national impact, the no-call type situations, other types of scams that are national and international, and that can be high dollar value across the nation that these companies have to pay.
Yeah, so a pretty good success then.
Yeah, we believe that we have a very strong success in we can't resolve everything, because some situations come down to individual disputes, and consumers can take those before the courts themselves to try and resolve them, because we don't have the authority or power to make a ruling in our cases. We can just put together the evidence. But we're not in a position to be able to do that on behalf of individual consumers. We have to do it on behalf of all the citizens of the state. So our investigations concentrate on those mass areas of impact to the consumers of Wisconsin.
And I would guess, maybe I'm wrong on this, but if somebody complains to you, you call the company that's involved, and they go ahead and cover and pay the person or whatever it is, you may not hear about all that.
Right. That number doesn't represent everything. Not every company reports back to us. They just say we resolved it. They don't tell us what they did to resolve it. And we want to spend our resources trying to help resolve the next situation versus gather that extra data.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks a lot, Joe, for calling. Jim and Mostyn, we turn to you next. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Michelle, Sandy, and Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
This would be a scam, but my folks bought a timeshare, it's probably been 20 years ago, and after my dad passed away, my mother wanted to sell it. But, and then they have like a two-week option every year to use it, and the family uses it. But they couldn't sell it after that. And I don't know if it was, an overabundant supply of condos available, or if it was the company that just, like I say, had an overabundant supply. Is there anything a person might be able to do about that, or just as a warning to a lot of these people that do look at condos for, timeshares, that type of thing?
Yeah. Sandy, you want to take that?
Well, purchasing a timeshare is usually a pretty large investment, and we recommend reviewing all the contractual information very, very carefully. what people tend to be upset about usually are the ongoing maintenance fees or any annual fees that really can add to the ongoing cost. When the economy faltered in 2008 and going forward, there were a lot of people out there that were trying to unload their timeshares. And I think there probably was an oversupply. As a result, we heard a lot about timeshare-related scams. And again, these usually involved some agreement where we have buyers waiting, we can get your timeshare sold within, you know, a very short time, and all you have to do is pay us up front. And it was usually, you know, in the five figures to pay them to find a buyer for your timeshare. And, of course, you know, you'd never hear from them again. So timeshares, it's a huge industry in this state. And, you know, it's the type of thing where you really need to review that contract very, very carefully before deciding to buy.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks again for calling and bringing that up. Bill in Wausau, your turn now. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was enjoying the program, and as I always do, and I got, and the phone rang. And they say, this is a public service announcement. And then they go on to say, if you take Xarelto, and if you've been injured by it, et cetera, and then they invite you to press some buttons or so you can get remuneration for it. I think this is some law firm that's just out fishing, and I'm sure I'm not the only one who gets these calls.
Yeah, thanks for bringing it up, Bill. Michelle, you want to comment?
Yeah. So they're not officially selling anything. They're offering you an opportunity to be involved in potentially whatever law action they're going to be filing or have filed. So it doesn't fall under no call. And you need to be careful with these things to make sure that you want to be involved in that action, whatever terms and conditions may apply to it, that they are a legitimate law firm that you would be involved in, and what information you'll have to give them and to be part of this. So a lot of considerations there.
Yeah, and thanks again for bringing it up, Bill. Appreciate it. Louise in Richland Center, your turn now. Hi, Louise.
Hi. I think I'm calling more out of curiosity than anything else. I have a dumb cell phone that I use very seldom, but I will turn it on, and I'll have alerts that I'll have 6 or 7 or 8 messages. Once in a while, I'll open one, and they all read as if they're from, like, a medical staffing agency, and it'll say something like, we could use your help at 1900 hours or need RNs tonight, and they'll say staffing. But the strange thing is that they are all from wildly different numbers, different area codes, so it doesn't seem like it's somebody just that has a wrong number.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if this is something or if you've ever heard of this before.
Okay. Sandy?
You know, this is so interesting because I just got one of those text messages within the last couple of days, and I thought they must have the wrong phone number, you know. But now I'm thinking that this is not legitimate. Very interesting. We've seen, well, first of all, if your phone number is on the no-call list, this text message is most likely illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, depending on some of the details. But yeah, their text messages can be fraudulent also. And if you called the number or clicked a link, if your phone was a smartphone, you would probably be prompted to offer personal information about yourself, name, address, credit card number, maybe bank account number so they could pay you, or a social security number so they could supposedly do a background check. So be as skeptical of text messages as you are of email messages.
There we go.
I usually just delete them, but
I think that's a really good strategy.
Yeah. I'm curious. I would like to investigate, but I'm not going to answer them or call them.
Don't fool with them, Louise. Okay. All right.
What you can do, Louise, is report them. You on our website, there's a fast-track no-call form, and it asks if it was a call or a text, and give us the information, and we can try and look into it. You wouldn't hear from us again, but this is what helps us know what's happening out there. And Sandy thought it was maybe a wrong number, but now we see a second pattern, and it leads us to think something else is happening.
Yeah, this may be in the newest trend out there.
Thanks again for calling, Louise. Patty, you know, we were talking about emails, and somebody called to say, well, your email has been hacked. What do you do if someone tells you your email has been hacked? What do you do?
Well, the first thing you should do is change your passwords immediately and use a long, strong, complex password. And the stronger you make your password, the less likely it is that somebody will be able to hack it. You may also want to let your internet provider know. They may be able to connect dots about intrusions they're seeing, and it may help somebody else from being hacked.
Joel in Westby, your turn now. Thanks, Joel, for calling.
Hi.
Hello, what's on your mind?
I had a publishing clearinghouse call me last week, and they said they had $2.5 million for me. And I said, no, you don't. I received the check last week, and I thank you very much. She hung up on me. She didn't want to talk to me after she found out I won.
And, you know, a check like that coming in the mail, that can be a problem if you cash that check or try to cash that check, I would think.
Yeah, and usually the way this scam works is they want money up front for the taxes or some processing fees, and there is no check. And sometimes these callers can get very, very threatening, too. And we've seen victims actually be used. They kind of get roped into the whole scam, and they act as a U.S.-based part of the scam. So it's best just to not engage with these people.
There we go. Thanks, Joel. Gail in Caledonia, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hello. I have been receiving a call every morning between 7:30 and 9:15. And they say they're from AOL and that they would like to give me something more for my being an AOL subscriber. I did call them, told them that I don't have an AOL, nobody in the house has it, and never had it. She said, okay, we'll discontinue in $24 to $48. Now, this has been going on for 3 weeks, 4 weeks already. And so nothing happened. So then I went to the AT&T store, because I subscribed to AT&T, and asked them what I could do about it. And the fellow there said, well, do a *60, and it will ask you if you want to block that call. Well, I did, and all I get is a busy signal. So then I, in the mail with my bill from AT&T, there was a customer service number, so I called them back. And he said that would not work because it's a robocall, and it could be coming from any buyer in the world, and that I should go to the police department and talk to them. So I did that. I talked to him, and he said the man from 18th last call said they would give me a number that would get it to stop. Well, our police department here knows nothing about a number that I can call, and he said there's nothing I can do about that except change my telephone number, which I really would not like to do.
Yeah. Well, Michelle, what is possible?
Well, what we've seen with these type of robocalls is if you do not engage, don't answer, don't hit any buttons, that they will continue, but in time will die away. So That doesn't seem like a very satisfying solution, but you will not become a target for them. And so we encourage consumers not to call back, not to answer. If you have an answering machine, let it go to the machine and see if it's a family member calling. They'll start to leave a message and you can pick up and engage in the phone call then, so that it will die away in time and you won't be added to other call lists and things. You can also file a complaint with us and we can track this because it's very similar to a Microsoft tech support scam or some of the other Google scams that we've seen where there's something wrong with your computer and you need to call us for services. And this is it's that tech AOL tech type scam again.
There we go. Thank you so much for calling, Gail. Appreciate it. Judy in Lodi, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry and your guest. I've been with DirecTV now for 3 years, and every month my bill is different, and I have to call them every month to get it straightened out. Is there any way to get out of their contract?
Okay.
Well, you have to have it for, you get free 1 year, well, not free, but a low ball price, and then they jack it up after the second and third year, and I mean jack it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, typically some of those contracts are the low price, and then it's a two-year contract with that increase. So you may be in a position to be done, but my suggestion is that you file a complaint. If you're calling them and asking for that bill adjustment and it's not holding, something's happening there that we want to be looking at. So you can call us, 1-800-422-7128, and have a form sent out to you. Or go online at datcp.wi.gov and file your complaint right there on our website.
What's the phone number again? Because I don't have a computer.
Sure. It's 1-800-422-7128.
7128. Okay, Sandy. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And we're about out of time. Carol in Kenosha, you have a quick question?
Yes, I'm new to renting after being in my house for over 50 years. Where can I get information for renters?
Oh.
Well, if you go to our website, we have a landlord-tenant guide that's really helpful because it takes you through the basics of what a renter needs to know. But some things you should think about are, when you move into the new spot, go through the apartment very carefully, noting any damage, because that'll become important when it comes time for you to get your security deposit back at the end of your lease.
And again, go to datcp.wi.gov. Or that will they send if you call?
Sure. Yeah, if you call the hotline number, we'll send you a paper copy of the brochure.
1-800-422-7128. 1-800-422-7128. That's the number. And good luck, Carol. Thank you for calling. And Michelle and Sandy, thank you both so much. Appreciate it. We'll look forward to your next visit the first Thursday of what? September. There we go. Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. They'll be back and we'll do it all over again. And thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.